have an issue with one man in particular. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and kind of pin any problem I have with this movie on one specific person.
Okay. Is it me?
It's not. No. You're not totally innocent. Let's be honest. No. And this is totally.
Are we moving into spoilers now?
Maybe, but maybe not. I mean, okay. Let's just say fucking say spoilers. And from this point on.
Okay. Everyone go see Avengers if you haven't already. All right. And now spoilers for the Avengers coming up. So if you've seen the movie, please listen for the rest of the show while we get super nitpicky.
Okay. So I don't really know if this is entirely the case, but the few examples I've seen where I'm like, oh man, I wish it was done differently. Or, oh man, this is an interesting choice that they've made. I think might be the responsibility of the producer, Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
Who I read one quote, and this might be all you need, where he said he's comparing the Avengers to Transformers Dark of the Moon.
What?
Where he wanted to have that ZOMG moment of scope and size. Like, oh my God, but I don't know. It's like what kids write in their text messaging machines.
ZOMG. Just add a Z to the front.
Like Zoinks, I assume, or Z-Gads. I have no idea. But this guy who's in charge of Marvel Studios, and actually, I want to say the CEO of Disney resigned like in April.
So yeah, because of John Carter, basically.
Right. So Disney is without a CEO, and this guy is actually rumored to take over for Disney. Mm. And so this guy who's the Marvel guy, and due credit, he's been responsible for Iron Man, which I love, and Captain America, which is awesome, and this. But then he says a quote like that where it's like he compares it to Dark of the Moon, and he wants like the size and the scope to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm just like, I take issue with that right there. Yeah. And going back, and I guess this is a tangential to what I said about like tech versus fantasy, whatever. I always have an issue with – I love Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. I think that's a great movie, and a lot of the reasons why I think it's a great movie are the characters, are the performances, are the casting, are the play back and forth between everyone. This is going to sound really nitpicky and really stupid, but I have a big issue with the ship, the mining ship that the Romulan whatever Eric Bana's character has that comes out of the wormhole, spoilers for Star Trek. And it is like, it makes the USS Kelvin and the USS Enterprise later look like dots, looks like mosquitoes to this giant thing. And I'm like, I don't see how physically, I mean, I imagine they build these things in space, but I don't see how physically this thing could even move or run or operate. Just the magnitude of it is unbelievable to me. And a little bit, I'm not going to knock Star Trek because I really liked it, but for a little tiny second, I'm taken out of the movie just because the scope is so outrageous. And I think that with some of this too, at the end, one of the battle sequences, I love the final battle sequence. I love what the Hulk does. I love what all the characters do. But so much of it is just like, well, I guess you just have to make it bigger and throw more at the screen. And there's more Chitauri and more these silverfish that are flying through the air. And it's like, what does it mean? It means nothing. It means that we have a really talented graphics designer, like 5 or 6 or 7 different firms that have provided graphic design visual effects to our movie. Yeah. And it to me, it's like I'd rather have a really great fight sequence one-on-one than just like, oh, all these like nameless, faceless creatures that are on chariots that are going through space or whatever. I just think that this guy, this producer that says these things, it's like, well, that's probably the problem because you see the movie is maybe more black and white in terms of like, I liked in Transformers how they have more robots in disguise. And so I need, in this movie, I need to have more bad stuff happen. And again, the caveat being that, to justify the involvement of all these superheroes that you need to have, you know, something that's
a big threat.
But it's so like at a certain point, it's like, okay, I'm kind of getting sick of watching Hawkeye shoot arrows and blow up and Iron Man fly around a little bit.
Okay. You know, for me, that sequence still worked.
It still works. I agree.
Because I felt like even despite the scope, and what I hope that Kevin Feige understands is like, scope is fine and size is fine as long as it's still rooted in your characters. And I felt like that big battle sequence at the end of the movie is very much rooted in the characters because the alien villains are completely generic. They might as well have been the bugs from Starship Troopers or whatever. Like, we know nothing about them. They have no personality. Right. They exist only they're a threat because of their numbers, basically, because they're pretty easy to kill. Like, there's just a lot of them, and so,
even Scarlett Johansson can kill them.
Yeah, right. And all she has is guns,
small guns.
For me, it was about that whole sequence was more about the way that their characters responded to that situation.
Sure.
And so I really liked that. You know, that was a lot of my favorite stuff in the movie. Was that stuff at the very end, because I felt like there were some scenes earlier on, some of the action sequences lost a little bit of that character stuff. You know, people are really in love with the scene where the Hulk chases down Black Widow, and I thought it was fine, but it wasn't necessarily a high point in the movie for me.
No, I actually think that scene kind of suffers from what I talked about earlier in terms of, like, I know at some point they're going to both fight on the same side. So, right, like, let's just have her escape already,
right,
and not get beat up by the Hulk, unless she has to learn something. I know she figures a little bit out about herself and about the Hulk. I think that was, like, the one scene where it cuts to her and she's, like, kind of scared, you know?
Right.
But it's still, like, it seems like filler to me to some extent.
Well, and
aside from it being kind of like a horror, almost a departure from a superhero, it's like this monster chasing a girl, you know? Right.
You know, that the whole sequence is sort of engineered to split the team up, to send Thor out of the helicarrier and to get Hulk out of, you know, to split them up, but kind of to what end, you know what I mean? Because then they basically rejoin like a scene later. It's like, why did we need to split them up then?
Right.
I guess it was just so that for a little while, Loki thinks his plan is working, but I'm still a little unclear on Loki's plan. I mean, he wants to rule Earth. Okay. That's kind of a generic motivation. And then he wants to divide the Avengers. And the way to do that is to get the Hulk mad. And then you kind of ask yourself, like, well, how did he formulate this plan? Did he know that they were going to bring the Avengers together and that Hulk was part of it? And I guess he did. And how did he know that? Well, I guess Hawkeye told him, because Hawkeye is under his spell. Like,
but there, point, I have Hawkeye questions know?
Like that. Yeah, right. I guess because he was part of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know. So I guess, again, we're in spoilers now, so we could talk about some of our problems with the movie. I think you were about to say this, and so I apologize if I beat you to it. Everything that comes like before the main title of the movie, where it says The Avengers, which is what this movie is called, doesn't really work. Like the first 10 or 15 minutes of the movie.
Absolutely not.
Are not very good.
I'll go a step further. I was bored for the first 45 minutes of the movie.
Really?
Easily.
See, once the characters start showing up, once the heroes start showing up, I'm back in. Because once we get that scene with Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow, once we get Chris Evans with the punching bag, like, all that stuff, I'm on board. But
and maybe it's because I was like, the first 15 minutes, and again, I think this has been talked about a lot online in terms of like, oh, this is weird, like how Loki shows up. And they're in this, like, the star power's not there. It's Nick Fury and his agent. I forgot her last name. Mills, I think her name is. Kobe Smulder. Is that her name?
Maria Hill.
Hill, sorry.
Yeah.
And it's just, and Hawkeye's there, but I still don't really know. I mean, aside from the weird shoehorned in Hawkeye introduction in Thor, it's like, why do I care about Hawkeye? Why do I care if he takes Hawkeye? Like, I don't really care. He shows up, he takes the Tesseract, which is a hilarious name for that anyway, and this cube of energy. It's like, yes, of course, this is how comic book movies exist. And I accept that. I am willing to suspend my disbelief and just be in that world. But it is boring. And it's Loki saying, I am Loki of Asgard. And it's like, okay, like it's someone else, you couldn't have written like, hey, that's Loki of Asgard, says one of the guards.
Well, yeah, there's a weird thing that like that they do think we're going to be invested in the idea that Hawkeye is sort of taken over by Loki and Stellan Skarsgård. And it's like, if you don't know that Jeremy Renner is playing Hawkeye, if you only remember him from that weird shoehorned in thing from Thor, like you don't understand how he factors into the story. You have no attachment to the character. So the fact that he kind of becomes a bad guy right away in the movie
almost feels like that's what's supposed to happen.
But it really makes no goddamn sense because there's no investment in it. And I don't understand how it advances the story, except the only thing I can come up with is that it gives Scarlett Johansson a motivation to participate, because it's sort of established that she's kind of out for herself a little bit, or it's hinted that she's been out for herself.
Well, she wants to clear her file.
In the past, yeah. But now that she knows, she wants to get Hawkeye back, so that's why she sort of participates.
Well, and the last thing I'll say about the opening scene, I think the reason I wasn't just, I think that scene was such a kind of a milquetoast opening that it took me a while to kind of forget about it. That's why maybe for 45 minutes I was kind of, even when, I like the introduction of Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
I liked when he's punching the punching bags and stuff, and he's like kind of disenchanted. The introduction of Iron Man, though, was a little also kind of just a little like weak, I thought. And yeah, we've got Gwyneth Paltrow doing a one-day cameo, but she looks weird, and like their chemistry is a little off, just a little bit off.
I don't know. I really liked their dialogue. I liked all the stuff about the 12%, right? And his first name is AJ. I liked all that stuff.
But that's just, I mean, it's on the back of Robert Downey Jr. being a smarmy, awesome a-hole.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. But again, it goes back to capturing the voice that was there in Iron Man and Iron Man 2. And like part of what we've come to like about those characters, Pepper and Tony Stark, is like their sort of 1930s screwball comedy banter.
Sure.
And so it was great to have that back, you know, and like the movie didn't lose it. And I like that she came and did a one-day cameo, because she didn't need to, you know, but it was cool to have her there.
Another quick thing about Kevin Feige. Obviously, there's been – it's no secret that Eric Bana – ooh, that's a weird callback – that Mark Ruffalo is the Hulk, is Dr. Banner, and he's the Hulk. And the previous Incredible Hulk was Edward Norton. He said he was early in the whole production process, he had said he's willing to do it. It turned out that through contract negotiations broke down, and that he was whatever that means. Again, it's like kind of
They didn't want him back.
But the funny thing was, I read it some like press release by Kevin Feige where he basically just totally screwed over. It was like really insulting just to say it didn't have anything to do with money.
No,
it was about
he was a pain in the ass.
And it's just insane to me. It's like, I'd almost rather, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just a purist and want the, like, Mark Ruffalo, I think, did a great job. But
no, I'm with you. When that first happened, and that was a couple summers ago, I was bummed out, because I'm like, listen, if you're going to go to all this trouble to establish a world and all this continuity, like, keep the same actors, you know?
Right.
And they kind of rushed signing Mark Ruffalo because they wanted to announce it at Comic-Con 2010 at San Diego. They wanted to get all the Avengers on stage, and there was like a panel on Saturday afternoon, and they were literally signing Mark Ruffalo Friday night, putting him on a plane and flying him out there so he could be announced on stage with everybody else. And I was bummed out about it. I was like, well, keep the same people, you know? And I thought they treated Edward Norton a little unfairly, but again, I wasn't there.
Exactly. If it's true that he's a pain to work with, which I, you know, it's not.
They had a lot of problems on Incredible Hulk. He had a version of the movie, like he kind of did an uncredited rewrite on the movie. He had a version of the movie that he wanted out that was like longer, more character based, and they kind of went with a shorter action centric version. And he was a little bit public about it, so they didn't get along super.
The whole thing just seems so petty to me, just to say like, it's not based on money; it's based on characters. We want a person that gets along with this chemistry, and fuck you. And it's like, wow, that's the lead of the studio, basically publicly admonishing.
Yeah,
you know.
At the same time, And it's not fair, because I will never see this version of the movie. After seeing it, I had a hard time imagining where Edward Norton fits in with that group, because Mark Ruffalo has a very different kind of energy than everybody else, and it works.
Right.
And Edward Norton doesn't have that same energy. So I had a hard time picturing what the version would look like with Edward Norton. Maybe it's still great. I have no idea. But yeah, I agree. I really liked Mark Ruffalo, and he has one of my favorite lines in the movie. I don't know if it's my favorite line.
Which one?
Right at the end, right before he changes into the Hulk last time, when he says, "That's my secret. I'm always angry." And it's Marvel is real good at cutting right to the heart of characters.
Yeah, no, that was a great line.
In so many of their movies. And I felt like in this movie, they did that several times, that they cut right to the heart of what makes this character interesting or special.
Do you think that, and this is maybe like the critique that a lot of people of my cut from my cloth of my ilk might have, the character, just to get down to it, the character of Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Yeah.
Why are they in the movie?
Well, I think ultimately it was because they wanted to expand the team a little bit and include some more characters. I really do. And, and maybe some characters that didn't have to be set up in previous movies, so they're not such big characters that they need their own film, you know?
And here's the thing, though. I think that they actually did a really serviceable job. I like their chemistry with each other.
Well, that's the...
I think they can go on to probably do, like, their own kind of movie. And the truth is, like, of the... all the Avengers, they're the two without superpowers, that they're just right. Like, she's just an assassin. Awesome. Right. He's the best marksman ever or something. Right. but they also, they're part of the team. I get that. But my issue, I guess, with any sort of bigger picture where you involve all these personalities and all these elements is that you have to bring them all in. And the movie runs, I think it's 2 hours and 22 minutes long. I think Joss Whedon had said that at one point there was a cut that was over 3 hours. That they cut a lot of the stuff that was Captain America's backstory or some his adjustment to modern life.
Sure.
Which I do want to see maybe in a Captain America 2 or something.
Yeah.
But then you introduce these two new characters that are just kind of like, well, if you're having such a hard time balancing all these personalities and all these storylines, you have to get to from point A to point B. You're introducing these other characters that are like, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me like, again, I like them fine, but it's. The whole movie,
Hawkeye, to me is the issue, and I was a fan of Hawkeye in the comic books. I like Jeremy Renner; he's fine in the movie. And once we get out of that stupid first half of the movie where he's under some spell, which again does nothing for the movie except give Scarlett Johansson some motivation, I really like him. And like you, I like the two of them together. And actually, by the end, when they're together, and lines like "You and I remember Budapest very differently," like. They're great when they're on screen together. And I was like, hey, maybe have more of that. Like this thing right. That's really good. Have more of that. Don't have him have... this weird zombie for the first half of the movie.
Right.
Because Scarlett Johansson does serve a purpose within the team, within the story. She's sent out, you know, she's a SHIELD operative. That's been established in Iron Man 2. She's right. The one who's sent out to recruit.
Yeah, she seems like Banner. Utility. She's a utilitarian,
right?
Member
like,
of it,
and that's fine. And so to have her jump on the team, to have her jump on the team makes sense. It's Hawkeye that is sort of out of nowhere and then shoehorned into the group. And again, maybe that would be better serviced by an Avengers 2. I don't know. I really liked Scarlett Johansson's first scene where the interrogation.
I did too, actually. I liked it a lot.
And then I liked the callback where she's talking to Loki and that's been set up. You know, I thought that was all really well done.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny. Just to credit to Scarlett Johansson for that first scene where she's being interrogated, like, I'm thinking, like, she's fucked. She's screwed. And she's not at all. That's like why it's, you know, it just plays really well.
The movie, I think, has a lot of really funny lines. A lot of good jokes, not just from Robert Downey Jr., even though he has the best ones. But I thought there were a lot of moments that had me laughing, sometimes just out of happiness. And a lot of that is from the Hulk, kind of late in the movie. He would do something that would just have me so excited that I would laugh out of surprise, particularly the scene where he beats the shit out of Loki.
Excuse me.
But also when he punches Thor, which I think was true to the character of the Hulk, wasn't just a laugh at the expense of the character, because I felt like there were a few times, and again, this is super nitpicking. I really like the movie. I really want to see it again, especially talking about it now. Like it makes me excited to go see it again.
Right.
Thor has a line that gets a big laugh where he talks about, he's still my brother. And then they say he killed all these people and he wants to rule the world. And there's a beat. He says he's adopted and ha ha ha. It's a funny line and Chris Hemsworth timing is fine. But it seems like there's a few moments in the movie where characters like are being funny on purpose, where it doesn't make sense that like this character doesn't know he's funny. Like Thor doesn't like make jokes really.
Right.
So there was just a few moments where it felt more like Joss Whedon making a joke than the character. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I absolutely.
But then there were other moments that were genuinely funny that to me didn't seem to sacrifice, character. And then there's one more nitpick that I want to get out. There's a ton of nitpicks, but I was really bummed out at the end. I felt like it was a little anticlimactic. Like Robert Downey Jr. flies up and that's great. That completes his arc that he's going to sacrifice himself and he is laying it on the line like Captain America talked about earlier. And he blows up the thing and it shuts everybody down. Like, really? That's it? He blows it up and all the other things die off. And
well,
that's
I think
it,
what he also did was he implanted a virus from his MacBook into the alien software.
But I'm even okay with that. What bummed me out more was, again, when we get back to, for some reason, Hawkeye and Stellan Skarsgård have to be
have to love the fact when he falls from the, like, Hulk saves him. That's pretty awesome.
I do love that. However, some of that was ruined by the trailers, but also it comes at the, like, had that happened in battle, I felt like that would have been more exciting, because it's like this one more neat character beat, but where we're already coming down, you know, whatever. It's fine. I like that he saves him, but I wanted that to be in a fight. But I was really bummed out at the whole, like, Stellan Skarsgård, like, oh, I built a failsafe into the scepter. Even though I was hypnotized, there must have been enough of me in there to build in a failsafe, and we can shut it down. And it's like, that's just a crazy easy shortcut, and who cares, right? Like I said,
no. But
I just felt like that's cheap.
If you're gonna buy into that, okay, this is a spoiler, and maybe you can explain this in the first sequence.
Yeah,
Hawkeye is turned into a zombie. Yeah. Hawkeye is the zombie. He takes his gun, and he is. You tell me. You correct me if I'm wrong. He's the world's best marksman
with a bow and arrow.
He shoots Nick Fury.
Yes.
Right?
But maybe he's not the best marksman with a gun. I don't know.
But he shoots him nonetheless.
I believe you are correct. Yeah.
How does Nick Fury survive? Is he wearing a bulletproof vest?
Right.
Why didn't Hawkeye shoot him in the face? But here's the thing that actually my wife pointed out to me is, like, if you're going to buy the fact that there's a failsafe and that Stellan Skarsgård has a little bit of him in him, that Hawkeye would also then, like, maybe not shoot to kill.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, maybe.
He would shoot to thrill, I think.
Again,
going back to the whole fantasy thing, whatever. Like, okay, Loki is a god, blah blah blah. So, the Hulk gets inside there in Stark's residence, and the Hulk grabs him. And one of your favorite, it's a great sequence where, like, he's like, "Kneel before me, I'm a god." And, like, before you know it, Hulk has him by the leg and is beating him.
Right.
It's hilarious and awesome. It's just what you want him to experience. But, like, he's fine. It's no problem. It's like, what? How do you what? So we need to, like, put him in magical handcuffs and and take him with the Tesseract into space. I don't understand. Like, that's why my disconnect. It's like, okay, I'm willing to accept all these things. But at a certain point, it's like, when you do have a fantasy-based story, it's so easy to write in, if you're the writer or director or whatever, it's so easy to write to all these escape routes, all these outs, you know, where you can be like, well, you know, he was this way all along, or, you know, it's like,
Yeah. Some of that is just, it goes with the package. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be willing to take certain leaps when you're watching this big superhero movie. To me, where it cheats is moments like that, where it's like, they just invent an out for themselves. That's not based in character. You know, like, why is Loki alive? Well, okay, but it's been established, you know, Thor survived that fall. Like, okay, these guys are, you know, difficult to kill. But to me, that cheat where he was like, oh, I built a failsafe. Like, come on, guys.
Right,
like,
right.
Maybe figure out another way around it. I don't know what it would have been, but whatever. But these are, you know, stupid nitpicks.
I don't think they're absolutely
they are, yeah.
I think that if people are listening to this podcast, it's like, that's what we're talking about. And here's the thing. We said for a half an hour, it's a great movie. Everyone should go see it.
Yeah.
But there's things. And again, I'm just trying to reconcile my past and my experiences and what I kind of gravitate towards naturally with this fantastical thing. And I'm still saying I like the movie, but I'm still saying, well, I wish that it was a little less like this, a little more like that, blah, blah, blah. Just, you know,
right.
But that's.
Did you like the scene where they fought each other?
Which one?
Where, like, Thor and Iron Man have their big smackdown.
Yeah. Oh, I like that a lot. Yeah. I like that more than actually the Hulk and Black Widow scene.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it too, but it felt like a little bit shoehorned in as a way of, like, we got to have these characters fight each other, you know?
I just liked it, though. I think it worked for me in a way because I liked it when Captain America got between them and was that kind of beacon of awesomeness.
Right, because, you know? Again, and he has one of my favorite lines in the movie too, and we should talk about some of our favorite things in the movie. And it's so true to the character, and I so admire them for including it, because in some ways it's kind of off-putting, especially from, like, Joss Whedon, who's, like, a pretty progressive liberal guy, but he has Captain America say, like, there's only one God, ma'am, and he doesn't look like that. I mean, it's so, like...
Right.
It could be off-putting, you know, but, like, it's so true to his character.
It was weird also when he tipped Nick Fury when he got into the ship. It's like, oh, that's interesting. He tipped the black
but
guy.
He has so many moments, and I love how he kind of takes charge at the end, and he's sort of like using military strategy, like, yeah, this is what he would be doing, and he sort of knows how to command.
That's his superpower, right.
And I thought that was great that they acknowledge that, because you definitely expect the movie to become the Tony Stark show, and I didn't feel like it did. You know, I think it avoided that pitfall. What the hell was I going to say before that, though? Captain America, when they fight. Oh, this is so stupid, right? But I thought for sure we get that great moment where Thor shoots the lightning at Tony Stark and Jarvis comes on and says, you know, power level's 400%. He says, oh, what do you know? Why that doesn't pay off at the end bums me out, because Tony Stark is unconscious, possibly dead. How do we revive him? I thought for sure, like, oh, Thor, hit him with the lightning, right? Because we've already established that that powers him up. But instead we have Hulk scare him awake. And it's one of those moments where it's like, it's a laugh at the expense of the reality of the movie.
I agree, but I do think that the Hulk shouting, because it's a very quiet scene and he shouts, it is like a genuine, I mean, it's I was willing to accept it just because it was a genuine laugh where I'm just like, oh, that, and it woke him up and he wanted shawarma. So
you stayed all the way through the credits, right?
Yeah. I saw the shawarma scene.
I mean, I thought it was really funny, and it definitely felt like maybe the most Joss Whedon moment in the whole thing, because for as much as he has a very specific voice, I was really relieved that it didn't become a movie in which everybody is Joss Whedon trading little pop culture references and stuff like that, you know? So I thought that scene at the end, which I thought was really funny. And you know that that scene they just shot like a couple weeks ago.
No, I had no idea.
They were on stage, I want to say, possibly for the premiere of the movie. I mean, it literally was like mid-April.
Oh,
And it somehow – somebody got up on stage and said, like, actually, we're getting together tonight to shoot one more thing. And I'm almost positive that it was that scene.
That's great. Yeah,
which, you know, sends you out of the theater just like laughing and convinced that like that movie was awesome because that scene worked and no one speaks and it has the courage to just have them sit there totally silent. I mean, the look on Chris Hemsworth on Chris Hemsworth's face sells that whole scene for me.
But it's also a thing too. I mean, you're right. I think that a scene like that totally makes you forget some of the weaknesses, if there are any, with this movie. But it's also, and it's funny. No one speaks. It's Joss Whedon-esque. But it also is like, you look at all their faces and it's like, what would these, if these guys actually went to get shawarma, like what the, they would have nothing to talk about.
Right.
They would just sit there, like they're all so dissimilar. And that's what makes them so great together.
Right, right. What did you, now, as a non-comic book reader, could you make any sense out of the mid-credit reveal?
No, I mean, I read up on it. No, I had no idea. I just assumed it was like a bigger villain, you know, like another villain for the next movie.
It's fine that they included it, but, you know, and as a comic book guy, I'm like, hey, neat, Thanos. But like,
Thanos,
it's not the kind of reveal, you know, they rarely have gotten the reveal right, with the exception of like, we'd like to speak to you about the Avengers Initiative. That was the one that's like, holy shit, that's a huge surprise to everyone.
Right.
Because everywhere else, it's like at the end of Iron Man 2, they find Thor's hammer and they're like, we found it. But guess what? We knew that next summer the Thor movie was coming out. Like, that works if we had no idea they were making a Thor movie. And then they find the hammer and we're like, holy shit, that means they're going to make a Thor movie.
Real quick about the Thor hammer, they found it. But here's the thing. They don't know what the Thor hammer is at this point, right?
Yeah,
they
just, well.
But yeah, no, for real, because I remember like watching the end of Iron Man 2 and the Thor hammer thing. And it's like, I actually watched it just the end of Iron Man 2 again, right before I watched Thor. And then when Thor shows up, they don't know it's Thor and they don't know what Thor is and no one knows anything about Norse mythology. So like, what exactly is this hammer? Unless it's just purely based on like their scientific readings of the the space-time continuum,
Earth,
you know, the storms and all that stuff. But like, we found the hammer. We found it. I don't think they explicitly say hammer, exclusively say hammer.
I really liked about halfway through the movie that a mystery is sort of established. That S.H.I.E.L.D. is onto something bigger and we don't know what, and the Avengers start to sort of bond over their collective mistrust of, are we being used? What's going on? You know, you guys have a bigger plan in mind and we don't know what it is. And I was a little bummed out because I felt like the plot itself wasn't super compelling. So I was excited that there was this little kind of mystery hook. I was a little bummed out that it got revealed pretty quickly, and I felt like the reveal was a little bit like, okay. But I mean, I think it's
What was the reveal again?
We're building nuclear weapons. Like, we want to use the Tesseract to build super-powered weapons because we don't know what else is out there. And I take back saying that, like, that was disappointing, because I think that is kind of true to the reality of the movie and the reality of the characters, that, like, hey, we learned that we're not alone and we need a contingency plan, you know? I was a little bummed out that the reveal happened so quickly, but honestly, had they drawn it out, it probably would have gotten old. You know, how long can you really drag that out?
What did you think about, and it's talked about a little bit, and there's really no payoff is the wrong word, but obviously when, okay, let's talk really quickly about Coulson dying.
Yeah.
Clark Gregg's
boo.
Death,
yeah.
Which is absolutely boo, because he is one of my favorites in everything he's in.
Yeah.
I remember watching him in the West Wing. He was a Secret Service agent in the West Wing, and he was great. He's pretty much the same character in everything he does, like that kind of very monotone, like robotic, emotionless type person. He's almost like a Vulcan, if you will. And he's great, and he's a very specific kind of character that this movie kind of needs in terms of its belief in the S.H.I.E.L.D. initiative and all that stuff. And Loki makes short work of him. He stabs him right through the heart, I assume, or through the chest with his saber, with his staff, with his whatever.
Yeah.
And he dies, and it's really sucky because he's a great character. But then he shoots real quick. This is a quick little nitpicky thing. I know we're not talking about nitpicky things anymore. So he has one of those awesome weapons that they got the idea from, that fire-breathing monster in Thor. And he gets a chance to use it on Loki. So he shoots him. And the last beat before he dies is like, oh, that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but then the very next scene is Loki, or not the very next scene, I think two scenes later, is Loki walking away. Like, what? I don't understand. Like, if you're going to, like, have him be, like, mutilated or something, have him be,
scar. I had a bigger issue with, oh, that's what it does, because I felt like it just repeated a really funny line from, like, three lines before where he says, I don't even know what it does. Like, the way he says it and the way it's kind of thrown away had me laughing really hard. And so I felt like, oh, that's what it does was unnecessary or whatever. Yeah. But
just like, I just want them to have, like, there's no stakes. Again, it's this fantastical thing that I don't like. It's when Loki is like, oh, he gets knocked down, but he gets back up again. should have called him Chumbawamba.
I wasn't surprised to see Agent Coulson die, because, you know, Joss Whedon has almost a compulsive need to murder characters in his properties. If you watch his shows, you're just like, I cannot believe they're killing off the people that they're killing off. And also, you know, of everybody, he was probably the most expendable. And I like that it led to him almost saying the word avenge, but then dying first.
That sequence in particular, like, he believes so strongly in S.H.I.E.L.D. and he talks to Sam Jackson and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, gives them motivation. And then Sam Jackson uses that. And then even Agent Hill points out that, like, he is duplicitous. And
I like that too, because I feel like it gives some dimension to Nick Fury, which is a guy who's willing to manipulate a situation to get the results that he wants. It's more interesting than just a guy who's like, get together, superheroes. You know what I mean?
Do we know how Nick Fury lost his eye?
No. I believe a grilling accident. No, I'm sure there's a version in the comics. I don't know. I've only ever known him with an eye patch. And again, in the comics that I was reading back in the 80s, he's like a white guy with gray temples and a cigar. Like, it wasn't until,
like,
I think,
oh my God,
exactly. Brian Michael Bendis did a book called The Ultimates, which was like, they try and reinvent the Avengers basically, and drew Nick Fury to look exactly like Sam Jackson. And so make Iron Man, it's like the dog is eating its own tail. It's like, well, let's have him look like the Ultimates version, which just looked like Sam Jackson. So whatever.
I think he actually paid Sam Jackson for the likeness. I think he agreed to you can use my likeness if you pay me. And then he's like, I'm going to get double salary because I'm going to be this guy in the movie. That's
how he's
huge
in the movie. Yeah. So I was bummed out to see Agent Coulson die, because again, he's this connective tissue between all the movies. But I mean, thematically, it kind of makes sense. Yeah, definitely. But thematically, it does kind of make sense, and it gives motivation to some of the, you know, it gives motivation to Iron Man. And I like, again, that it sort of underscores what's great about Captain America, that Agent Coulson, Captain America is what he believed in, you know, that he was a symbol. And so Captain America has to, like, live up to being that symbol.
Right.
There's a few moments throughout the movie where I felt like some of the action, and particularly some of the extra work, the extras, It reminded me a lot of, like, the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man. Like, I didn't love all the photography because I always felt like the original Spider-Man sometimes was a little bit ugly, not on purpose. And I felt like some of that happened in the Avengers. And some of the stuff with the extras in Spider-Man and again in the Avengers I felt like was a little corny. The scene with the cops. I mean, I get it that, like, oh, they have to become believers in Captain America. And that's it's a neat moment because, again, here's our cynical world confronted with this guy wearing the flag. And we are immediately convinced by his awesomeness. And we're just like, yeah, okay, we'll do what he says. But, the bit with, like, the little Growing Pains daughter at the end on the news and, like, some of the stuff.
The Growing Pains daughter?
The girl who's like, Captain America saved my life. I want to say thank you. She was the youngest daughter on Growing
Pains. No way!
Yeah. She's all grown up. So some of that stuff, I just, again, corny isn't a fair word to use because that's part of the movie's charm, that it's willing to be kind of corny, you know, but I just, these are such nitpicks.
We that's established. It's okay.
I had a great time with the movie. Did you have favorite moments?
I'll say this. I wish there was, what I respond to in movies oftentimes is kind of what anyone would respond to. In a lot of, like, and especially in a universe like Marvel, and again, I don't know it as nearly as well as you do or our fans do, but obviously in this universe, there's so many layers to it. And I feel like, yeah, in the first Iron Man, there's the Avenger, when they tease the Avengers, I wasn't even, like, responding to that but I did respond to it because I'm like, wait, if everyone, this is something big, but I don't really know what it is yet. And then I another reason I don't like Kevin Feige, and I think he had come out and said that, I think I read this on Badass Digest where he said that there's no Easter eggs, there's absolutely nothing in the movie, don't look. And I'm like, why the fuck? That's a great thing to have. Like,
If I
see Captain America's shield in the background in a Thor movie, how awesome. It's like, oh my God, did you see that? That's great.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have that? And I think that I needed the movie to have more of that, but it wouldn't, obviously, just because of Joss Whedon, I think, agreed with Kevin Feige and said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just, it is what it is. And I'm like, I don't know. I think that's kind of, now going back to the, and I don't really know. I'm still thinking about my favorite moments in the movie. Mm-hmm. And this, again, I just saw it, like, literally a few hours ago. So I'm sure my opinions will evolve, obviously, too. I asked you about the inclusion of Hawkeye and Black Widow in the movie. And I realized, I think I read that they're, are other Avengers that did not appear in the movie. I mean,
again, you're talking about a continuity that is constantly changing.
But specifically, there was Ant-Man, Giant Man, and Wasp, right?
Yes, they were some of the original Avengers. But, I mean, Vision and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were Avengers. At a certain point, literally almost any hero in the Marvel universe has been in the Avengers. You know what I mean? Like,
was Spider-Man ever? This is my nerdy.
I mean, as recently as a couple years ago, Brian Michael Bendis sort of reinvented the Avengers. And yeah, Spider-Man was one of, it was called the New Avengers and Spider-Man was one of them. And so was Wolverine.
I so want to see that too, you know, like, and again, I'm not a fanboy for this stuff, but, like, I do love those properties and I do love those franchises. And, like, if you're going to cross worlds, why not cross it with, like, your biggest marquee player?
And that's kind of the bummer of the fact that, like, all these different studios own these different properties because they're not necessarily going to cross over, you know, because Sony is going to be super protective of Spider-Man. And that's why we keep getting these stupid reboots, because if they don't make a movie, if they don't exercise that option on that property every couple of years, they lose it. So every couple of years, we're going to get, like, another terrible Ghost Rider movie so that Sony can hold on to Ghost Rider, you know? Like,
I think one of my favorite moments from the movie, and I think this is why, obviously I'm partial and I've said this a couple times, like, I love Iron Man and I love Captain America. Those are my two favorites. I do love Thor a lot, but it's mostly Chris Hemsworth's portrayal of Thor, I think.
Yeah.
Any scene between Tony Stark and Captain America. I forgot his real name. What's his real name?
Chris Evans. Steve Rogers. Yeah.
Any scene between them, because it is, like, this down to the most basic level of, like, a cynical, modern, sarcastic, out for himself, selfish, versus the complete opposite of that. And I just love, I wish there was more of that. You know?
And again, you have to appreciate in 2012, like, a movie that embraces Captain America's goodness, his optimism, because he's the one who brings Tony Stark around to his way of thinking, not the other way around. You know, it'd be so easy for like, let's drag Captain America down into our cynicism and misery. But like, no, right. He brings everybody else up to his level. And that's great in a movie in 2012, where it's almost always about cynicism and shittiness.
Oh, like, absolutely.
For him to bring Tony Stark around to be more like him is to be admired. But yeah, I agree. I remember from the first trailer I ever saw, the one thing that had me excited, this was before they had that shot of Hulk rescuing Iron Man. The one thing that had me excited was like a line that Chris Evans delivered to Tony Stark, like, "Ah, big man in a suit, what are you?" And I was like, yes, I'm interested in that dynamic. The dynamic between the two of them had me excited. And yeah, all of the scenes where they are interacting with one another, I thought, were where the movie really worked. Even that scene where they all start arguing.
Yeah, it was a little like on the nose, but I definitely, it was like obviously kind of designed to be that scene, but right. It was like, right. They all had valid things and they were saying things that
right.
Kind of picking the scab at old sores, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I want to go see the movie again, and I'll probably watch it a bunch when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. Not because I love every single minute of it, because there are scenes that I don't think totally work, especially those first 10 minutes. But like, there's these peaks throughout the movie that I'm already, like I said, chasing, where I want to get back to that moment where Chris Evans says, you know, "Hulk, smash," and he jumps up and just starts tearing shit up, because the movies really haven't gotten Hulk right yet, you know?
Well, to your point, you were talking about early before about the extras, about some of them are being like corny and stuff. I want to just say this. This is such a out of left field thing. There was one extra, not an extra, I guess extras don't talk, but one actor, very small part, on the bridge of the helicarrier, which also the helicarrier, it's like, yeah, sure, helicarrier, whatever. And he was like, you know, saying like, you know, "Should the engine one is out, sir." And I'm like, where have I seen that guy before? And I realized he was the rookie cop on the Chicago Code. So I'm like, yes, that makes me really nice sad that I saw all 10 hours of the Chicago Code. But
yeah, but it paid off when you watched the Avengers finally.
Do you think the guy is in the Avengers movie, so I'm sure his career is fine. But it's like, you think that was like, "Mom, I landed this great TV show on Fox." Yeah. And now I'm like the guy saying, "Engine one is Iron Man and Engine three."
I'm excited that the movie is doing so well, because I think it's really good. And again, you know, if
wait, are you though? Like, do you think that's going to beget like it's just going to?
Well, that's kind of where I was going. Yeah.
Let me just interrupt you.
Yeah, please.
Bobby, that was.
Because as much as I say like, no, people, you know, stop with like, this is what we should have from in a summer blockbuster. But like, yeah, this is a summer blockbuster that pays attention to character and dialogue. It has really good dialogue. And that rarely, like, look at those fucking Transformers movies. I mean, that is some of the worst dialogue ever. This movie has really good dialogue. Right, exactly.
It has Zach Penn, Kevin Feige scope. This movie that like could never fly in Manhattan. Like, where's their propulsion systems?
This movie has a line like Captain America saying, "There's only one God, man." And he doesn't look like that.
Right.
So there's so many great lines in the movie. And it has great characterization and good performances, you know. So it has so many things that we should want out of movies, and I'm excited because it's this huge gamble that paid off, that they kind of stuck the landing and that they're going to be rewarded for that. I am excited, but yeah, I'm a little nervous about it. A, because I think it creates a new bar, not quality-wise, just success-wise.
Scope-wise.
Scope-wise, yeah, for every other movie that like, oh, now we have to be as big as the Avengers. And I don't think that's going to be good for the movie industry. But also because of like what I think you were about to say, that I worry that Marvel will learn the wrong lessons, and they've been very smart so far in choosing their actors, in exercising some amount of quality control, and specifically in choosing their directors. You know, think about the people who have made some of these movies. You have Sam Raimi and Kenneth Branagh and Jon Favreau and Joss Whedon, Bryan Singer, you know, like some really interesting filmmakers have been responsible for some of these movies.
With visions and direct, like an idea. They're not just like utilitarian whatever, that they come in with like a perspective and not a Michael Bay perspective.
And when you hear that like Kenneth Branagh is doing Thor, you're like, Yeah, I can kind of imagine what that's going to look like, or even Joe Johnston doing Captain America, maybe just because he did The Rocketeer, but you're like, I kind of imagine. I know what I that's going to look like.
Why Natalie Portman even signed on to say, like, Kenneth Branagh directing a superhero movie? Yeah, like, right. I got to be part
that's,
of this.
That's interesting.
And then I have to totally drag this down.
But I worry that they're going to learn the wrong lessons and that they're going to now greenlight a whole bunch of, like, lesser comic book movies because they're going to think, like, oh, well, this is what America wants, right? Just nonstop superhero movies. And honestly, I mean, after this summer, I think the burnout is going to be complete. Like, the Avengers gave us everything we want out of this larger-than-life, colorful, fun superhero movie. Dark Knight Rises, I think, is going to give us everything we want out of this dark, gritty, sort of crime movie. And Spider-Man is going to give us another Spider-Man movie, so we're going to be spent.
You're right in that this is it. This is the pinnacle. This is it, because I think there always will be superhero movies. It's an established formula.
Yeah.
But I think that this is, like, if you are a fan of this kind of movie, and I am, even though I'm not like a reader of the comic books or I don't have that history when I was a kid, it definitely is something special. This whole summer is ridiculous. Just to think that we have. In any other summer, a Battleship would be a huge movie.
Right.
Men in Black 3 would be enormous. You've not heard anything about these movies. You've heard about Dark Knight, Avengers, even Hunger Games. I know it's not a summer movie, but still, like, that kind of opening the doors to summer and saying, like, yeah, 400 million bitches, you know?
Right. And now here's Avengers already, you know, probably poised to beat that.
And they're all quality.
And it's the first movie of the summer, you know what I mean? Right. Like, right out of the gate, it's just going to destroy everything. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with Dark Knight Rises.
My fear, too, is that you said, you know, before about Marvel being like learning the wrong lessons. I'm just afraid that, like, this further kind of not only raises the bar in quality, but just, like, kind of makes a lot of movies, like, the movie making business is kind of swinging back towards that, you know, you can't really do it if you're a startup. Like, if you're a kid out of college and wants to make a movie, it's becoming harder and harder, even though the technology is becoming easier and more affordable. And everyone's got Final Cut Pro and everyone's got a point and shoot camera that has video capability. It's like, well, you're not at the level of this, and it will always kind of sustain the studios. But it's like, well, I guess when you want the kind of smaller action movie, you can't really do that because everything needs to have a billion explosions.
Right. But will people look at this and just see the box office and say, oh, America wants superheroes? Or will they actually, like, take a step back and understand that this is such an anomaly, because not only do you have five movies that all cost hundreds of millions of dollars each – building up to this, that it's essentially a sequel to a $700 million movie. You know what I mean? Because if you add up the budgets of all the other ones, but you also have decades and decades of comic books like that people have been reading. So these characters have been around forever. This isn't just this thing that you can reproduce easily, you know, like this is an anomaly. And so to try and think that, like, oh, they want superheroes and let's just cram as many characters in, you know, I don't know. How quickly does DC greenlight a Justice League movie? I don't know. You know, they tried to do it a couple years ago, like motion capture, and it all fell through. But the last thing I'll say about the movie, and this is, we've been talking bigger picture, and now I'm going to go back to one specific thing. I don't think the Thanos reveal is particularly exciting again, except unless you're a huge comic book nerd and you're like, oh, hey, I think Thanos is going to be the villain in Avengers 2. But, like, again, big deal. The reveal that excited me a lot more, and that I think they could have left the movie on without any of the Thanos stuff, was that last shot of Tony and Pepper Potts, and it pulls back the Stark building, and the only letter left is the A.
Oh yeah, great! It was a great visual.
Yeah, like, because now, you know, again, as a comic book reader, in your head, you're like, oh, they're gonna do the Avengers Mansion next, you know, and that was exciting.
Oh, is that something?
Tony Stark, in the comics, Tony Stark.
Is that a retcon?
Builds and owns the Avengers Mansion, you know? And so that's what that last shot suggests, that they're rebuilding the Stark Tower to be the Avengers Mansion. And so that was exciting to me. And again, it came out of the story that we had just been told. It didn't just all of a sudden introduce, like, oh, and by the way, there's this guy and you'll see him in 4 years, everyone.
Right. You know, if anything, I'll talk just briefly about the Thanos thing, is that what I'm not crazy about is, like, just people sitting on rocks in space and, like, the humans are dead. And so, like, the reveal is like, oh, great. I thought, like, dispensing with the Loki character, it means we don't have to necessarily have, like, these gods and these, I mean, again, my nitpicky goes to the core of my being, but it's also like the guy, the other, I believe his name was like the guy controlling the strings of of Loki looked to me like Skeletor. The acting was ridiculous. Kind of like Hawkeye,
man.
Right. And kind of like Hawkeye's acting, by the way, in the first half of the movie was kind of very ridiculous and very kind of like everything was like snapping the bow out. And I'm like, what are you doing? Stop it.
He's like, the only one who's like acting like he's in an action movie. Just I got to do this because I totally thought the same thing. But again, it goes back to this thing that like if you like more grounded, regular villains or threats or whatever, like you're probably going to get that out of an Iron Man movie. It's just going to be another guy who also builds suits or whatever, you know, it's going to be Obadiah Stane or Whiplash. Whatever. When you get to the Avengers, you can't just have some like billionaire guy who builds robots. Like you have to go big. You have to go outer space. You have to go gods, you know.
And maybe for me, that's just the built-in flaw. You know, I'll never be totally on board with that than I will be with even Captain America. I know that the villain, the Red Skull, I forgot his powers actually. I only saw the movie once.
Head was red.
Oh yeah, and it was a skull, right? That was no nose. But it still was, you know, to me, just it's, you know, I realize that I get that the Avengers will, and same with I assume a Justice League, and I don't know anything about DC,
right? But that's what's neat about the Marvel movie universe. Just like that's what's neat about the Marvel comic book universe is that you can read these individual books or see these individual movies, and they exist in this one world, and then when you combine them all, they're part of this much bigger, crazier world, you know. And as long as they stay true to the characters and focus on that dynamic, I don't think it totally matters what the threat is. Obviously, you want the threat to be big. You want the stakes to be high. But what will make the movie work isn't the fact that it is or is not Thanos or any alien or any god. What will make the movie work is the group dynamic.
Absolutely. And the group dynamic is awesome. Yeah. And honestly, I could watch an hour and a half movie of them just kind of like hanging out, you know, and fighting smaller villains. But I realize again,
like purse snatchers.
Yeah. Right. Those guys are out of control.
Drug dealers. Just like pot dealers. Let's have a whole movie where the Avengers take on just like college student pot dealers.
Just go to Oaksterdam University. And like, we're shutting this thing
down. Tear apart a college and beat the shit out of these little guys holding dime bags and
like
stuff.
Pepper spraying the UC Davis students. What? This is cops did this. Thugs. You should explicitly see the Avengers if you haven't already. Thank you very much for having me on the show, Benny.
Thank you for talking about the Avengers for like a really long time. Everyone, that's go cool. See it. Yay, summer 2012 is underway.
Absolutely.
Douglas, last thoughts?
Douglas smash.